Chapter 23. Sterndrang, the Underhive of Molyor.
"He lives," said Xartath, standing amidst the carnage of the arena battle, "and walked away from the fight."
After burning the mutant cultists, Agatone had set the ex-black dragon loose. They had reached Seven Points, found it to be a haven for the depraved and debased worshippers of Slaanesh. But their quarry was gone. With no other lead, they needed to find Tsugan's trail, and soon, before it went cold. Xartath had done just that, and was crouching over a spore he and he alone could discern. Agatone joined him, leaving Exor to watch over Issac and act as sentry. Though most were no match for Adeptus Astartes, the Underhive was fraught with many hazards Agatone was keen to avoid. A delay now could destroy any remaining chance they had of finding Tsugan, and he was determined to bring the wayward Fireborn back. Third's reputation was damaged, the confidence of its chapter master in it tarnished. They needed this. Agatone needed this. It would be done, one way or the other.
"Which way?"
Xartath gestured vaguely east. Even to Agatone's enhanced senses, it was just more industrial gloom. The pipes, gantries, and striated sublevels seemed to extend endlessly.
"How long ago?" he asked.
"Few hours."
Keen to get moving again, Agatone was about to rise and summon the others when Xartath grabbed his wrist.
"He did not leave alone," said the ex-black dragon.
"An ally?"
"Perhaps," said Xartath. "Or a prisoner," he snarled,
not liking that word for all the memories it raised of his own incarceration, and let Agatone go. Agatone got to his feet and hailed Exor.
"Tekmarine, we leave now."
Exor turned. He looked battered, his carapace armor shredded by the rat swarm, but at least his wounds were healing.
"Xartath has his trail," Agatone concluded.
"Still no word from the others," said Exor as he joined them. The Tekmarine had been checking the vox bands, trying to locate the frequencies of the other hunting parties and make contact. All of his attempts had proved fruitless so far, however.
"Some sort of deep subterranean interference. Perhaps if we could get higher, above some of this metal and compacted industry."
He sounded irritated, and Agatone wondered how much his injury was bothering him, or whether he could still hear the keening. It lingered at the edge of Agatone's hearing like a barely audible subtone, grating, but still present. His system had been purged of tainted blood, but some of its effects clung on tenaciously.
"Locke and Clovius's warriors would be very useful right now, but we go where Xartath leads us," he said. "Keep trying, brother."
Exor nodded. Agatone turned his attention to Issac.
"You kept your word, Medicus. You've honored us with your service, but I won't ask anything further of you. Here is where we part ways."
Issac smiled, as a man does when he realizes a fundamental truth and takes pleasure in his own enlightenment.
"I was wrong, Brother Agatone."
Agatone frowned, restive and eager to be moving on.
"Speak your mind, Medicus."
"My calling is not in Kabula. It is here, with you and your warriors. Let me come with you and see this through. You have already said you cannot vouch for my safety. I accept that and will join you anyway."
"He will slow us down," said Exor.
Issac gave the Tekmarine a sideways glance.
"With respect, in this terrain, in the Underhive, you would slow me down."
"He has a point," said Agatone, considering. "The Medicus comes with us, but we go now," he decided, brooking no further protest and turning to his huntsman. Zatath!
The ex-black dragon was staring into the shadows. His gaze followed the distant figure of a blood-stained boy carrying a spear. But there was no water and no fish for him to catch.
I can see, Zatath began, half rising before he realized it was an apparition, some manifestation of his subconscious, and not a boy at all.
A second figure stood behind it, looking on grimly.
So both father and son had returned. Though he could not yet fill the lacuna in his memory, Zatath knew he had done this to them. He felt their revenant malice, their cold, dead eyes glaring, and
"Brother!"
was brought back from the edge of the nightmare by Agathon's voice.
"Are you still with us?"
asked the captain. Zatath nodded, obeyed. He led them away from Seven Points, following Tsugan's trail. And the keening inside his head thrummed ever louder. As the others followed, Agathon slowed to grab Exor's shoulder.
"Keep a watchful eye,"
the tech marine nodded. Despite his familiarity with the Underhive, Isak struggled to keep pace. Zatath moved quickly through the wreckage. Sometimes stooped, occasionally on all fours, it was hard not to think of him as a beast. But he traversed the low ceilings, access pipes, and crawl spaces like he was born to it. To his brothers, he seemed driven. To Isak, the transhuman warrior looked possessed. Something had invested him with purpose, a bloodhound with the scent of its prey pungent in its nostrils. A singular imperative drove him, one the others had no knowledge of. It rang loudly inside his skull, a promise and a curse combined. For several hours they gave chase, following Zatath into the Underhive, not really knowing how far or how deep they had plumbed in search of Tsugan. Occasionally, Zatath would stop, pausing to examine some detail or recheck their route. They'd only doubled back once before he had Tsugan's spore again. They were getting closer. No one challenged them. There were no more gangs, no more monsters, just darkness and metal. The toxic agglomeration of centuries' worth of neglect and industrial entropy. Agathon was uncertain what the silence presaged, but he assumed and prepared for the worst. When Zatath finally came to a halt, he did so standing at the precipice of a wide circular abyss. It was vast, large enough to accommodate a small starship, and its ragged edge suggested it had either fallen to ruin or something had punched through it.
"Another false trail?"
asked Exor as he watched the shadows around them for any sign of disturbance. Agathon slowly shook his head, his eyes on Zartath's unmoving form.
"I don't think so. Not this time."
The ex-black dragon had his back to them, but it was obvious from the angle of his neck that he was staring down in the chasmal darkness in front of him.
"I have heard of this place," said Isak.
He was walking in between the two salamanders, protected on either flank. Agathon might have acceded to his joining them, but was not about to leave the Medicus undefended. Agathon stopped, prompting Isak and Exor to do the same. He kneeled down, like a father might to a son, so his eyes and those of the Medicus were at roughly the same height.
"Tell me what you know." "It's called the Well, and has been here for as long as I can remember."
He spared a glance towards the chasm and Zatath loitering over it, who appeared to be transfixed, before averting his gaze back to Agathon.
"You have to understand, Molior is old. Its roots go deep. Much of its vastness is uncharted, unknown. What the Imperium does not need anymore.
Here he gestured to their immediate surroundings. It forgets and leaves it to decay. Do you know what this place was before it became a hive?
Agathon shook his head. He also gestured to Exor to go and keep an eye on Zartath.
Issac went on. It was an administratum archivium, a place of secure knowledge about the Imperium and its history. Over the centuries, millennia even, it was neglected, forgotten.
What is your point, Medicus, and how can you know all this?
You hear things, learn things. My point, Brother Agathon, the knowledge kept safe. It is still here.
Agathon saw Exor in his peripheral vision. The tech marine was waving them over.
Whatever lies here, it is no concern of ours. I want Tsugan. Zartath says he's close. That means we're almost done. I won't linger.
Zartath looked down into the abyss, as still as a statue. Exor was standing beside him, surreptitiously running a bioscan. Agathon stalled the tech marine's report with his upraised palm. He had known something was wrong with Zartath since Kabula. It didn't matter now. He had to hope the ex-Black Dragon would perform his duty long enough so that they could achieve the mission.
What do you see?
Agathon said to Zartath, no louder than a murmur.
Darkness. Something is alive. Down there.
The so-called well reminded Agathon of a long gullet fanged with spiky and uneven teeth. It was not so much of a stretch to imagine it having sentience, to being a microcosmical glimpse of something larger and more terrible. In truth, the gullet was a wide and broken shaft, rough at the edges, and the teeth were jutting rebars and large splints of twisted metal. He looked up to the ceiling and saw the pattern repeated. Rather than at the bottom, Agathon gauged they were actually somewhere in the middle of the shaft.
I can see a trajectory, said Exor.
Agathon nodded.
Something crash-landed here, hot and violent enough to bore through the surface and several layers of sub-hive beneath.
I hear it,
uttered Zartath, and made the others turn. He was still staring.
The keening, suggested Agathon, at which Zartath nodded. It's much louder below.
Agathon turned to Exor. What did that scan tell you?
Nothing. Physically, he is fine. Better than I am, for certain. Whatever's wrong with him is not in his body, Brother Captain. But I am no apothecary.
He looked to Issac, and the medicus shrugged.
Without conducting a more thorough examination, from what I can tell, he's right. Zartath's illness is psychological.
Agathon scowled. He still needed the huntsman. But Zartath was verging on the catatonic. He tried to get what he needed.
Is Tsugan down there? Did he follow the keening too? No. He climbed.
For the first time since he had reached the well, Zartath looked up and pointed.
Up there.
He gestured to a gantry leading to a stairwell which rose up and over the edge of the shaft that had been cored through Molior and into a higher level. Moving away from the shaft seemed to help Zartath's cogency, so Agathon gently pulled him back from the edge. Zartath looked him in the eye.
It doesn't matter what you do, Captain. I must go to it. End it.
Agathon seized Zartath's shoulders, trying to stay the focus of his attention. But the ex-Black Dragon's eyes wandered.
We are close, brother. I need you here with me if we are to finish this. This is as far as I can go by your side, Captain.
Xaltath replied, shrugging out of Agatone's grasp. Engaging his retinal augmentations, Exor scanned the point Xaltath had indicated.
I have faint heat traces, some blood.
Hope kindled briefly as Agatone turned to the Techmarine and asked, Recent?
Very.
As if drawn to it by the siren-like keening, Xaltath was moving towards the edge of the shaft again. When Agatone reached out to hold him back, the ex-black dragon snarled.
Stand down,
Agatone warned, but didn't let him go.
Release me,
Xaltath growled.
You are not yourself, brother.
Exor drew his bolt pistol, firmly pushing Isak behind him, but Agatone waved him off.
I am handling this. I am a warrior, said Xaltath, his tone almost pleading. I am not to be handled like some beast.
You are not a beast, Agatone replied, but heard the lie in his words.
At least I know you can be more than that.
For a moment, Xaltath almost looked like he believed him, and the hollow opals that were his eyes softened in a fleeting impression of remembered brotherhood, before it was swallowed behind something darker and more feral. Breaking free of Agatone's hold, Xaltath roared and the bone blades slid from his forearms. Not waiting for a command, Exor fired. The shot was high and deliberately wide, glancing Xaltath's shoulder. The impact spun him, and he staggered backwards. It was enough to send him over the edge of the shaft and into the darkness below. Agatone leapt to grab his flailing hand, but missed.
No!
He was left on his stomach, facing the abyss, and watching Xaltath's slowly shrinking form as it descended, until the darkness claimed and he was lost from sight.
Captain, Exor came rushing over. I had no choice. I had to.
Agatone got up without the Techmarine's help.
At that range, you could have killed him. I thought you would have. What stopped you?
I saw the man grow larger than the beast, Exor replied. I believed, as you did, that he could be saved.
Do you still believe that?
I do, Brother Captain.
Can you track him?
Yes, I can follow his biological trail easily enough.
He tapped his bionic eye as if that explained how.
But what about Tsugan?
Go after Xaltath. Find whatever is driving him to the brink of insanity and bring him back. I won't lose one in order to find another. I'll continue after Tsugan.
Take the Auspex, then, said Exor. It's inloaded with Tsugan's biological signatures. Not foolproof, but it'll help you find him.
Won't you need it?
I can find him in that hole without it. If he's alive, I'll bring him back, Captain.
Agatone nodded his thanks, attaching the scanner to his belt.
When did you do all that? The data inload, I mean, he asked.
A few seconds ago, when I blinked.
Agatone laughed out loud.
Secrets of the Martian Brotherhood, eh?
There is only one brotherhood that has my allegiance.
Agatone smiled, finding a soul tempered by the anvil. Exor seemed not to notice and gestured to Isak, who was looking in the direction of the shaft, where he had just seen, or thought he had seen, Xaltath plummet to his death.
What about him?
The Medicus comes with me. I'll need him.
Agatone held out his hand, and Exor seized it in the warrior's grip.
You do realize it's madness to split up our party, said Exor.
Agatone nodded.
Sometimes you have to risk everything in order to succeed at something.
Vulcan's fire beats in my breast, Exor said to his captain.
With it, I shall smite the foes of the Emperor, Agatone concluded. Move quickly.
As part of his trappings, Exor had a high tensile strength wire and grapnel gun. Stepping back, he fired the launcher into the well, where it snagged on one of the many outcrops of metal debris. He then attached several disc-shaped objects to his belt.
"Suspensors," he explained. "They'll slow me down enough so that I don't break my neck or get impaled on a rebar."
Then he leapt over the edge and let gravity take him. Agatone didn't need to watch him land and make the slow traverse. Exor was on his own now. Entering Molyor as little more than a neophyte, he had grown into a battle brother with similar skill and judgment to a veteran. Agatone wanted fiercely to have him as a member of Third Company. He would need warriors like that to help rebuild it and forge its reputation anew. First, he had another fireborn to bring to heel. Isak looked up from the well.
"How could he have survived that fall? We Adeptus Astartes are hard to kill, especially fireborn. Takes more than a long drop to finish us."
"But Zartath isn't a fireborn," Isak replied.
"Ah, Medicus, but he is. And I would see all my brothers returned to Nocturne's forge."
Urging Isak to move, Agatone eventually reached the other side of the chasm, where Exor had indicated Tsugan had gone. Clambering up to the precise spot, Agatone reached down to help the Medicus and easily hauled him onto the ledge where he was crouching. Standing, Agatone looked out into the deeper underhive, trying to imagine Tsugan's route and what he could have been doing. All he saw was further wreckage, a sloping ceiling, shattered pipework, trails of viperous but inert electrical wire, and an icon. It was half buried in all the detritus, begrimed and otherwise obscured by filth. But Agatone's keen eyes discerned its symbol as well as its meaning. It was an imperial eagle split down the middle, one head and wing lost to decay. Agatone checked the auspex. The trail led to the broken eagle. Beneath it, there was a gap in the rubble, just large enough for a transhuman body to crawl through.
"The archivium you mentioned," said Agatone, pointing. "Could that be it?"
Without a space marine's genhanced vision, Isak didn't see it at first, but after a few seconds he made out the eagle.
"It must be." "Tsugan went inside," said Agatone, without a trace of doubt.
Isak frowned, unable to make the connection.
"To what end?" "I'm not sure it was his idea," said Agatone. "Either way, that's where we are going."
Exor hit the ledge hard and felt the impact throughout his body. His wounds were healing, but more slowly than he'd like, and they flared angrily. He winced, taking a moment to marshal the pain and catch his breath. The suspensors were lightening his weight, but not enough. As a means of lessening the encumbrance of a las cannon or heavy bolter, their intended purpose, they performed well. Utilized as an improvised anti-gravitic, less so. In his current condition, without them, he might already be crippled. So he bit down, retracted the grapnel, and prepared for the next jump. Launching the cable into the darkness, focusing on a point where he could snare the grapnel hook, Exor tried to gauge the distance to the ground, but couldn't. Depth was impossible to speculate, as was Zartath's eventual position. He could be dead. If that was the case, then Exor would still have to locate him and haul his body back to the surface, then wait for Agatone's return. He leapt out into the unknown. Heat from a venting pipe seared his face as Exor passed through a grimy cloud of steam and gritty particulate.
He landed awkwardly, jarring his knee, and wondered if he had overestimated his fitness for duty. Rolling onto his back, he looked up through the now dissipating miasma jettisoned from the pipe, and estimated he had descended almost 800 meters by variously rappelling down and leaping from ledge to ledge. As the mist cleared fully, he saw something else, a claw mark just 2 or 3 meters above him. The inner side of the shaft led to the various sub-levels of the underhive. Whatever object had cored through each level had exposed them to each other like layers of diseased flesh. Ordinarily accessed through myriad tunnels, lifters, or stairways, the well made reaching Molyor's substrata much easier. Zartath had chosen this place to make ingress, hunting down an enemy only he could perceive. Exor would have to follow him and hope they could overcome that enemy together. As a tech marine, and a relatively inexperienced one at that, he knew little of battle psychology. But it didn't take an expert to know that Zartath, whilst loyal, was damaged. He had heard about the ex-Black Dragon's imprisonment in the alien realm and his subsequent rescue by the Fire Drakes. He had also heard about his heroism during the Dragon's strife, when all of Nocturne was at war. But Zartath was still an enigma. If he found him, alive, sane, Exor was not sure what to expect or how to approach him. Logic would dictate he formulate a plan, but that was of no use here. Instinct was all he'd have to go on. Noting the position of the claw marks and Zartath's likely entry point, Exor lifted himself up, using a strut of broken rebar for support. As he did so, he felt a tiny vibration, like a minor seismic tremor, ripple through the metal. At first he thought he had got up heavily, moving awkwardly because of his injuries, but then realized the vibrational resonance persisted even when he was still, and the ledge had settled under his weight. Tiny flakes of metal peppered his armor and exposed skin. So focused on the descent through the well, Exor hadn't noticed until he had stopped and taken stock of his situation. Now he looked up and saw the glinting metal drifts fogging the air. Larger pieces of debris accompanied them, and as he analyzed the scene in more detail, noting the massive chunks of wreckage on the verge of plunging down into the shaft, Exor was put in mind of a slowly eroding cliff face. Only in this instance, the cliff was a steadily widening hole, suffering under the effect of sustained seismic resonance. He realized that the well had been much smaller originally. It must have taken decades for it to reach its current size. Whatever initially came through was likely much smaller than he had first estimated, but its arrival had triggered an effect that was slowly shaking the entire area apart. Using the haptic implants in his bionic hand to analyze the vibrations, Exor estimated that the source was coming from deeper into the hive, exactly where Zartath was headed. Securing his gear, the tech marine climbed the short distance up the shaft to where the claw marks mapped his path. There he found a large vent, the inside recently scratched, as someone had crawled through it. First drawing his bolt pistol so he could crawl with it in front of him, Exor entered the vent. It led to a narrow access tunnel, tight enough that he dragged himself slowly on his elbows. Exor emerged onto another ledge into a flickering halogen glow. A cluster of overhanging lamps fizzled with their weak electrical connections, casting the scene in front of him in murky grey monochrome.
A capacious chamber opened out in front of him, helping to banish the claustrophobic sense of containment engendered by the rest of the underhive. It had a vaulted ceiling and the outward appearance of a wrecker's yard, for a few meters below the ledge was a steep slope of accumulated industrial detritus. Rather than the slow degeneration of neglect and disrepair Exor had seen so far, this wreckage had been piled here deliberately. In the weak light, he discerned girders, roofing plates, blast doors, gantries, several tons of mesh grating, all the debris that had come down on top of whatever had crashed through the hive levels in the first place and ended up here in Mollio's underhive. There were bodies as well, most too emaciated and skeletal to have been recent. Victims of the collapse? It was certainly possible. Some of the half-mangled structures looked like tenement habs. If Kabula was any gauge, then the collapsed structures would have been vastly overpopulated when the sky fell down on them. Tens of thousands could be rotting amongst the rubble, and Exor realized with a rare spike of compassion that he was looking at a mass grave. Wasted limbs jutted from the industrial morass, skulls, skin stretched thin as parchment across the bone, leered at him through the lattice of collapsed metal.
"Vulcan's mercy," he breathed.
There were no heat traces, nothing in close proximity. Whoever had piled the wreckage had since moved on. Nothing had been scavenged either, which seemed at odds with the philosophy of the underhive he had come to understand. There was only a path wide enough for a small cargo loader or four-track freight hauler to traverse that led deeper into the level. Whatever was waiting at the end of that road was obscured by the subterranean gloom and the peaks of wreckage. It had to have taken a small, dedicated army of workers to shift that much metal. Exor tried to contact Agatone, but the Vox return was too weak. Signal interference from the depth, he assumed. About to move out, he stopped when he felt the blade against his neck, and silently cursed for allowing himself to be caught off guard so easily.
"You whisper too loudly," said a rasping voice, redolent with the stink of raw meat. "Should I kill you now? Is that why he sent you?"
Exor holstered the bolt pistol, raising both hands so that his assailant could see he was unarmed.
"I came to find you, brother."
"Am I your brother now, then?"
"Petulance doesn't suit you, Zartath."
Exor tried to break away, but the bone blade sank deeper, nicking the skin around his neck.
"Why save me back then, only to kill me now?"
"A slave to logic, trying to reason with an animal. You amuse me."
He gave a throaty laugh, causing spittle to fleck across Exor's cheek, but the Tech Marine didn't flinch.
"You are still a man, brother. Agatone would not have..."
"Agatone! I am our captain's faithful dog, brother. He keeps me leashed, or have you not noticed? I am the necessary monster he needs to achieve his mission."
"Then why send me after you? To put you down like the rabid dog you think you are?"
Exor laughed too, mustering as much derision as he could. Since Mars and his induction into the secrets of the Mechanicus, emotion had become increasingly difficult.
"Leaving you down here to rot would have been much more logical."
Silence lingered in the wake of Exor's voice, broken only by the ex-Black Dragon's feral breathing. Slowly, the pressure against his neck eased, and Exor turned to face Zartath's cold, staring eyes. He snorted.
How did you ever advance beyond the rank of scout?
I had help. It wasn't a lie. Valin had been at his side throughout. It had not been easy to leave him. Their bond had been forged in blood, but their paths diverged. Brother Captain Barken had told them it was Vulcan's will. Exor wondered if his battle brother yet lived.
And are you here to help me or stop me?
Asked Zartath, shaking his head.
The latter will not go well for you, I think.
Exor knew he was in no condition to fight. Even fully fit and armed, he would struggle and likely die going up against the ex-black dragon. I've seen you fight, he said, holding up his hands in surrender. Zartath regarded him for a moment, gauging the Tech Marine's veracity before giving him a draconic smile that revealed both rows of his fangs.
Your instincts are better than I thought, Martian.
I am not a Martian, Exor replied. I am fireborn.
That is what they tell me also, said Zartath, leaping silently over the ledge and scaling the wreckage below.
Exor went after him, slower because of his injuries. When they reunited at the bottom, Zartath concluded,
But we know differently, don't we, brother?
Exor chose not to answer. Zartath was in a capricious mood. It made him more unpredictable than usual. As a tech marine, Exor based his interactions with others on logic. The ex-black dragon adhered to no such principle. He was a creature of pure instinct. Perhaps that was the source of Exor's distemper towards him, and the reason why negative emotion was easier to elicit in his presence. He chose to be direct instead.
What's down here? What made you leap into the pit?
Zartath's face darkened, and all his humor bled away, replaced by haunting neutrality.
The keening.
That's not an answer.
There is no answer. It just is, he snapped, allowing the briefest chink of weariness to show. It's like a passenger I cannot release.
He pointed to his skull.
Inside my head, calling, always.
Exor had felt it too, but not to this degree. A drone lingered at the edge of his hearing, but so faint he dismissed it as imagined or a part of his subconscious. Zartath's exposure to the taint running through the blood of Molyor's vermin had been much less, yet his affliction appeared magnitudes worse. It had to be something else. Zartath's mutant physiology had made him more attuned, exposed him because of his greater sensitivity. Exor knew something of xenobiology, that there were several known species that could emulate a siren call. Such abilities were psychic in origin, but perhaps in this case there was a physical factor also. However, there was another explanation. Chaos. It was the moral corruption of the soul. Mutation was its physical expression. Some mutation was tolerated, even essential. Navigators, astropaths, even the Adeptus Astartes Librarius. The Imperium would cease to function without them. They were also the individuals at greatest risk from contamination by the warp. Such men and women were conduits that, if improperly channeled, became doorways for unnatural creatures. It was logical to assume that mutants, those bearing the physical stigmata of ruin, could also be susceptible in some way. Whether on account of his mutation or some as-yet-unrevealed taint within him, Zartath's psychosis was pulling him to this place.
like a piece of driftwood caught in the maelstrom's inexorable gravity, he could do nothing to prevent it. Exor merely feared the reaction when Xarteth was finally forced to confront that which had almost driven him insane.
And when you find whatever is causing this keening, what will you do?
The coldness returned, Xarteth's eyes like chips of carved jet.
Kill it!
He moved off, low and fast, into the flickering half-light. He seemed different, edgier, and feral. Exor had no choice but to go after him.